And so my thing is, go find someone who's where you want to be. And that's what I tell everyone. Go find someone who's where you want to be and just ask them questions. And then be willing to do stuff for free. Be like, hey, can I come mow your yard? And then can we just talk for 30 minutes? Like, I love where you're at. Let me do something. I know your time is valuable. So let me do something for you. And then you give me your time. And most of the time, they're never going to make you mow their lawn. But even that, like, humility to be like, you clearly have gotten somewhere. And I do this to people all the time. Like, people like you, right? I'm in the construction industry. And so my dad has nothing to do with construction. And so I'm like, there's a lot of things that I got to learn from other general contractors, and they've already made it, right? And I'm young trying to figure this out. And so how can you go give them something so that they'll give you your time? And most of the time, if you buy them lunch, that's enough.
Welcome back to the Life on Target podcast. As always, your host, Nathan Spearing, bringing you an interview today with Calvin Rust, a 24-year-old serial entrepreneur. And you'll understand what I mean when I say that. He's owned and operated multiple businesses, sold businesses, employed many people, and you're not going to believe this kid is 24 and doing all these amazing things. I have been watching a trend on the internet of young people complaining, not necessarily that there aren't forces arrayed against you and that it's an uphill fight, but come on, guys, this is the curse. This is the fall. Men are going to try to get power by means that are not right. And we as Christian men have to take ownership of our lives. We have to be students. We have to learn and grow and hopefully carve out a little slice of heaven for our family and for future generations. And so I'm going to start doing these interviews with younger entrepreneurs that are working hard where God has placed them, that are students and lifelong learners, specifically in business, hopefully to give some of the people out there ideas on how they can take ownership where God's placed them, where they can make more money per unit of time, where they can afford to buy a home for their family, grow, and essentially thrive no matter what is happening in the market. And so I hope you enjoy this interview with Calvin Rust. And also, if you listen to this interview and you're thinking, I know a young guy that's doing stuff similar to this guy in other areas, send me a DM, connect us on the socials, and I want to start putting these positive images of what young men can do when they have a mindset and are willing to just jump and make it happen. So enjoy this interview with Calvin Rust. You just jump right into it, you know, where you're born and raised, your family, education, and we can go from there.
Perfect. Yeah, so my name's Calvin Rust. I born and raised in Idaho. So my parents moved here, and their vision for moving to Idaho, they were on staff with Campus Crusade for Life. So they did a lot of like college ministry. They did that for a lot of years. I think they had five kids when they decided they were going to get off of staff. Dad was going to go work for his dad in an instrumentation and control systems company that it's like a rep model for a business. And so, but something that went along with that is they also at that point decided, and they had been kind of paving this path for themselves for a while, but they were going to homeschool their kids. They wanted to live on a farm. Work ethic was really important to Dad. And so he kind of had this vision for raising his family and kind of the blue collar, kind of what we're seeing, like a resurgence of today. He had that about 20 years ago. And so he's like, we're going to move to Idaho. Land is cheaper up there. At the time, Idaho was cheap land. The economy was not what it is today. And so they came up here. They looked at some properties, found 40 acres that he was like, we can raise some alfalfa. We can get some animals. My kids can learn work ethic here. And so kind of fast forward, my older brother farmed, I think, 30 acres, kind of built the framework for like an alfalfa farm for us. My sisters had some horses. We had some milk goats. And so by the time I was 11, or I was 10 when my older brother moved out, when I was 11, my dad said, hey, we have all this equipment. So he had all the tractors we needed. We could do the custom farming ourselves, right? We weren't hiring anything out. It was not great equipment, but it was enough to get, you know, 30 acres farmed. And he was like, what I want you to do is you got to pay for the water. You've got to pay for all the hay, or at least give me all the hay for our animals. And then any equipment that breaks, you need to figure out how to fix it. And other than that, I'm not going to charge you anything for using the equipment or doing anything. Basically, go farm. And if you can figure it out and sell hay or sell whatever, if you want to sell wheat, he didn't care. He's like, just figure out how to make money. And so I look back at that, I'm like, dang, to trust an 11-year-old kid with all your heavy equipment, running balers and 100 horsepower tractors and stuff, maybe more faith or better dad than I'll be. But went out there, kind of started to figure things out, had a rough couple of first year, but over time started to kind of build up kind of a mentality of the harder you work, the more money you make. I think by the time I was 13, I was probably making like 25 or 30 grand a year, which at the time was like really, really good. And then at the same time,
60 grand nowadays.
Yeah, 100%, which is like for a kid to be able to pull that in. And honestly, it was subsidized by my dad, right? Like that agreement would, there's a lot more expenses
that
go into
that. You had the land. You didn't have to lease the land from them. You didn't have to go buy the tractors.
Yep. Yeah. Wasn't paying taxes or anything. Like he was definitely doing it to set me up. But I learned a lot of things through that. And one of dad's big things was,
did he buy all that stuff because he made so much money at Campus Crusade?
they were living on like a $1,200 a month or something crazy back when they were on staff. But dad wasn't rich when he moved out here. He owns Rust Automation and Controls now, and he does well. But at the time, they sold their stock account, basically didn't have a dime to their name, and they had enough to put a down payment on the property. Like they didn't have any money. And so we bought all the equipment at auctions. They would save up, they'd buy a rig, they'd save up, they'd buy a disc. We ran.
And that was when he was working for his dad. And then he ended up taking over the business from his dad.
Exactly. But at the time, Rust was at a kind of a weird spot with some of the partners that we had. It wasn't making a ton of money. So it wasn't like he was raking it in. He was on commission, but even then he was the owner's son. And so there was some, there were just dynamics there where he wasn't making a lot of money, but he had a vision for his kids and he figured out how to make it work. So a lot of my success I attribute to dad, because I think he had a vision and he was able to help me kind of understand the importance of working with adults. And if there's one thing for like young guys, it's like you've got to figure out how to work in the adult world. And you have an advantage when you're a kid because everyone wants to help a kid. And I found that all the time. People would come to me and they'd be like, oh, you were selling premium alfalfa hay and you're 13. What is this? And I run them through and I got really good at selling, you know, what I'm doing and dad's vision for our farm and everything else. And then I'd have customers for life. They're going to buy from the 13-year-old and they'll even pay a dollar more for his hay because they want to support the kid out there, you know, hustling, right? Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people, even simple things like go read How to Win Friends and Influence People. But if you shake people's hand, if you look them in the eye, if you say their name, if you remember their name, it's just really simple things that the bar is so low for people under 18 years old, right? Like just go out there, do the basics things, be really respectful. And that served me really well. So I was able to, from the time that I was 11 to 18, or I think I was 17 when I passed the farm to my younger brother. But I was like able to make good money, learn a lot of like sales tactics that have served me really well. And dad runs a sales business, or they've got a rep company. And so that was important to dad. He understands the importance of sales. So he was always riding me. Hey, how are you talking? Are you being smart about the way that you're coming across? How are you dressing? Just all the little things that you kind of just like can subconsciously build in with enough repetition, but it's not automatic unless you're taught or unless you kind of figure out what makes a difference. Right. So kind of
what would you say that if you had to put a percentage on it was doing it, and then having somebody that's asking you the right questions about you're doing it. Because that's essentially that person that's pulling you outside of that little kind of narrow rut. And is, had you thought about this? You know, and you're like, oh, shoot. So you get, you know, like for you, how much, you know, I guess even just for people that don't have a dad that you know, I guess you say even from like the rich dad, poor dad, like you got to find somebody that can give you something. You know,
100%.
So if there's a kid out there that's like, I don't have that, my dad's not asking me these questions, what would you say to them?
I've had people ask me the exact same thing. I'm like, go find someone. Everyone, if you will ask questions, people want to talk and want to give you wisdom. It's just, that's just a fact of life. And so if you learn to ask questions early, like if some 13-year-old kid came up to you and was like, hey, I want to learn from you. Can I just shadow you? Let's talk. Like, I'm trying to figure out this business thing. You'd give him the time of day, right? Everyone wants to help the young guys, especially, but I think it's just true. Younger people, the older people want to pass the wisdom and the hard things that they've learned to the younger generation. They want to help, right? And so my thing is, go find someone who's where you want to be. That's what I tell everyone. Go find someone who's where you want to be and just ask them questions. And then be willing to do stuff for free. Be like, hey, can I come mow your yard? And then can we just talk for 30 minutes? Like, I love where you're at. Let me do something. I know your time is valuable. So let me do something for you. And then you give me your time. And most of the time, they're never going to make you mow their lawn. But even that, like, humility to be like, you clearly have gotten somewhere. And I do this to people all the time. Like, people like you, right? I'm in the construction industry. And so my dad has nothing to do with construction. And so I'm like, there's a lot of things that I got to learn from other general contractors, and they've already made it, right? And I'm young trying to figure this out. And so how can you go give them something so that they'll give you your time? And most of the time, if you buy them lunch, that's enough. But sometimes you got to do more. You got to go out to a job site. You got to go scrap it out. Hey, I'll come help you frame a house. Whatever that is, right? There's a lot of different ways to do it. But I do think Proverbs is full of talking about getting wisdom. And I think it's like incumbent upon young men specifically to go find some gray haired guy who's done it, been there, and get input. Because for me, like you're saying, when you're talking about percentage of impact that had, I think dad was good about not giving too much. He wasn't overloading me, but about every couple months he'd come, hey, I noticed you did this. Or he'd come sit through an interaction with me and a hey client. He'd say, hey, you should try this the next time. And it wasn't like he was overloading me or being overbearing. He was just like, just try this, see if that works better for you. And then you're like, oh wow, like that really worked. I'm gonna kind of start implementing that. And so it wasn't as much of like a checklist. It was just kind of, hey, try it. If it doesn't work for you, that's okay. And dad always says that. He's like, everyone sells differently. Right. You've got the guy who's going to be uber technical and has no interpersonal skills. But if you're so technical, you can overcome interpersonal skills. If you have really good interpersonal skills, you don't need to be as technical. Right. And so there's, everyone's going to kind of find a range. Are you the donut guy or are you the technical guy with all the data sheets? Right. How does that work? And so going back to your original question. Find someone who's where you want to be and figure out how to just get them to talk, right? Don't be so arrogant that you're always trying to tell them what you're learning. It's like, nah, dude, they've got a lot that they can give you. And if you see it that way, come with 10 questions and try to shut up, right? So I guess going back to kind of the farming thing, transition. So at the same time, so I was raised homeschooled. I was homeschooled. And so we were able to do school at the same time as work. And I had to do school through the summer because in the fall and the spring, I was working, right? The farm started up. And so basically I would just go down to like 3 hours a day, but they pretty much almost every summer I was doing school, or like maybe there was a curriculum that had some sort of summer program where I could get ahead in math or I could get ahead in literature or whatever it is. And so mom and dad were pretty good about figuring out how to structure it so that we could get school in, but then we'd also have a life outside of that. I played a lot of sports, not organized sports, but with our church, we did a ton of sports. We did a bunch of different work activities. I had a lot of time, but school was taken pretty seriously. It was just like, hey, wake up early enough, get these things done, and you're going to be okay. And so then by the time that I was 14, I started doing dual enrollment, which was really good. So I went to a community college and I think my first college class was like a comm class, and I got all my prereqs out of the way by the time I was 16. So at the time, I'm going to go for a mechanical engineering degree. That's the plan. I'm going to go work for Rust Automation. And then, so I'm running the farm. And then at 16, there's a group of people who come to our church who they're all framers or landscapers. And so I get a summer job with my now brother-in-law who ran a framing company. I was like, hey, that sounds cool. I'd like to make a little money. I've got the farm kind of running where I could do both. And so I worked part-time for him, learned how to frame, and was like, Dude, how much are you making per square foot? Like, we're doing like really simple single levels or two stories. These are not manufactured, but like your base model first time home buyer homes. And like Lennar, you probably have Lennar over there. Lennar, Hubbell is another one. Richmond America, those style homes, right? Your base levels. And so he was like, yeah, we're making $4.50 a square foot, right? And so I started doing the math. I'm like, dude, we're putting out a house every 2.5 days. Like on a 2,000 square foot house plus a garage, you're making really good money, right? And so he's paying us, you know, $18 an hour or whatever at the time. And so then this is
And you thought
where
18 bucks an hour was great until you heard $4 a square foot.
100%. I was like, wow, I think I could do that. And so I wasn't the best framer, but I had saved all my money. And if I can tell anyone to do it, if I can tell kids to do anything, I'm like, save your money. It makes a difference to like whether it's birthday money or not, like just figure out how to handle your money and have a plan for your money. If you get money and you're like, oh, I could go buy a Lego set. Oh, I could buy an airsoft gun. Oh, I could go do this. It's like there's a certain amount of living that's important. You want to have fun. But if you're shooting for something a little bigger, it's like, dude, have the long term, start understanding how to work with your money. I was buying Bitcoin when I was in my teens. Like I was always trying to do stuff. I tried to drop ship. I was just always trying to use my money to at least make more money, right? Whatever it is. And so, but at the time, so I'm 18 now and I framed for 2 summers. I paid attention through that time and got to the point where I'm like, okay, I think I can do this. Like, yeah, you know, 16 inch on center, double top plate, you set your trusses, don't let them fall over. I think we're good, right? And that's at the time, we're kind of moving right into COVID. And so, like, framing boom like nothing else. And so this is where I go partners with a guy. His name's Paul. And he had framed for longer than I had. So he was a better framer, but I had saved a lot of money. And so we kind of talked and I was like, hey, I can float us and then I'm gonna learn how to be a better framer from you. And he's a year younger than I am. So he's 18 at the time and I'm 19. So we start, you know, we just go buy ourselves a trailer, we go tool it out. I think we were 30 grand into the whole setup, start framing. And
At that point, just for kids on like 30, you are 19 and you can literally pay cash for a framing setup, trailer, tools, and everything. You have 30 grand at 19, you know, and that probably wasn't all your money at that point. And you're living at the house still?
still living at the house. So my dad was, he was, his kind of mindset was, hey, if you're working hard and I like what you're doing, I'm not going to kick you out. You can move out at any time. And I really appreciate that, but it's kind of incumbent. Like if you're going to live with your parents, it's kind of incumbent upon you in my mind to like, you got to save at least $1,800 a month for rent, right? Like if they're going to give that to you, you can't, you owe it to them to go make more of yourself because they are literally just giving you a handout, right? And so to any kids who are living with your parents, I don't actually think that's a bad thing. I think figure out how to save your money as much as you can. And if you're like, hey, I'm gonna live with my parents till I'm 21 and I'm gonna save
And
$1,800 a
then let there
month.
be a yield from their investment in you.
100%. Because your parents don't want the rent, right? They want you to do well, but they're trying to set you up. If you're just squandering that, you're not doing well with what the Lord's, you know, gifted you, right? And so I got crap from all my friends. Why the heck are you still living with your parents? All the things, but I'm like, hey, like I got a long-term vision here, and I'm trying to
Do
save
any of
as much
those
money as
they
I
do
can.
any of them work for you now?
Several of them have or did. None of them do currently. And so yeah, so we start framing, and this is where the economy really did help us. We were making really good money and we weren't that good of framers, right? We were trying to figure this out, but all the builders needed framers. And so we were able to go get on two of the builders' framing lists. And there was a couple supers who kind of took us under their wing. And again, if you're going to start a business, you got to have thick skin because the amount of times we got called and ripped a new one, yeah, you know, happened on every house for probably the first 15 houses we framed, where they're like, this is an embarrassment. They, you know, they're calling our character into question. And we're like, we're genuinely trying. And we're like, okay. Yeah. And that was our thing. We're like, we'll go fix it. We'll go work till 4 a.m, you know, from 11 at night to 4 a.m. to fix the house so that it's ready for the, you know, your MEPs to come in. But like, and we'll try to not let it happen again, but it's going to happen again, right? We're still just learning. But the economy was kind of allowing us to make those mistakes because they needed framers. And so, and that's, again, those.
So when you say supers, this guy took us under your wing, he took you under to chew you out.
Yes.
Not baby you. Like, you're actually saying he's giving us honest feedback on our product, and yep, that's taking us under our wing. Yep, instead of exactly being like, this guy's a jerk, I'm going to go get a job for somewhere else because I'm way better than this.
No, we knew that if we wanted to make this work, and we were making good enough money that we're like, we're gonna make this work. But we knew we weren't the best. We were trying, but we probably stepped out a little early, but we knew we could do it. We knew the economy would allow us to do it. And these guys, but I appreciate these guys. I look back and I'm like, were we, you know, kind of griping about it in the moment? Why is he calling us out at 12 o'clock at night? We got called out several times at 12 o'clock at night. We've got trades coming in here. This house is an abomination. You know, that type of conversation. It's like, you don't, like, in my position, we were like, we don't have any ground to stand on. So we got to go do it, right? But that was good. We learned a lot of things. And I
but you got another house after that from that same guy, right? Yep. So that's the feedback is you screwed it up. You made it right. He gave you another house. If you didn't get out of bed at midnight and go fix it, you wouldn't have got another house.
Yeah,
you know,
they would have cut us off the list. Yep.
So
it was hard. It was good though. And so we started raking in money. We moved to 2 crews at the time, and so we're framing 450, 4 to 450 a square foot, 5 for 2 stories, and we start 2 crews. We get all our buddies working for us. Which was a ton of fun. The only thing that I'd say is if you're going to hire your buddies, don't talk about money with them. Because I learned this the hard way. We hired a bunch of our friends and we started, you know, we were just too flippant about, whoa, we just made 12 grand right there. We knocked out 12 grand in 2 days. Like, we are kicking it. But you end up, not everyone's built to be a business owner. And not everyone's in the stage of life where they've saved enough money to go do it, to go take the risk, or has the skills. And so you can end up building resentment with your employees where they're like, maybe they're, in my case, a lot of them were older than me. And they're seeing me talk about all this money I'm making and it's inflated, right? I don't know the difference between, you know, I'm just talking about revenue, right? Like, and those are the only numbers they're hearing. They're not hearing actual baseline. They don't understand the expenses. Yeah. They're just like, holy cow.
They didn't have to get a $30,000 rig. You know?
Exactly. But I didn't do a good job of kind of balancing that. And so we ended up kind of ticking off a couple of the guys who were good friends of mine and still are good friends. But it just, for young guys who do go out there and make some money, be very humble about it. Because the reality is it's not going to last forever. And so take advantage of it and don't talk like you know everything because you don't know everything. So all mistakes that I made that I'm, you know, pass on to younger people or I try to. But so we're framing and then Paul's dad ran a landscaping company. Paul had worked for it all growing up and he decided he was going to move to Indiana. And so we decided, hey, let's buy his landscaping company. And the way around here that like those smaller routes are evaluated is on like, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks of mowing income. Mm-hmm. And so we bought it for 67 grand. That included a decent amount of equipment. And so Paul and I were just basically like, we're making good money. We're going to invest it back. And we knew that the building thing wasn't going to last forever, right? We had seen it. We'd heard about it from all the other building guys. They were like, we're killing it now. But you weren't around in 2008 when we all lost our houses. And so we're like, well, lawn care is a good way to kind of diversify. And no matter what, lawn care will always exist. Doesn't matter what the economy is, right? Maybe some people will go buy push mowers, but we just might have to drop our price or whatever. At least we'll have a job. So we went, bought the landscaping company. And then...
How many employees and crews was that?
So like? Zero employees, 0 crews. We basically just bought a route. And so then we hired a couple guys who were really, really good workers. Like, we did not realize how good these kids were, but they were homeschooled as well. They went to church with us. And, like, did they complain a little bit? Were we not the best bosses at different times? 100%. But these kids showed up, got work done, and one of them still works for us. The other one went to the military. I hope he comes back someday. But
he will.
They're what's that?
He will.
he signed a couple more years on his contract, but we'll see what happens in the long run. But they worked really hard. We trained them, and Paul is a great trainer. He grew up landscaping, so he knew what he was doing. We built a pretty solid route. I think we doubled the amount of yards that we had. We went in, and I think we did a price increase of like 30% the first year. And so we were doing really well in the landscaping as well. I think we were top line revenue, doing something like 15 grand a month and running about 35% net profit. And so for us, like at the time, we weren't doing anything. These kids literally just took it and did what we told them to do. Like, they just mowed all the yards. We didn't have to deal with anything. And so that was awesome. That was a good experience for us, kind of learning how to build a crew. That was our first kind of taste of building some semblance of a business, because there's a big difference between a job and a business, right? And early on, we didn't really understand that, right? We're like, wow, we're making a ton of money. This is an epic business. And it's like, well, you're just working your butt off, right? So a lot of that was just us working hard and getting paid well for it, but it wasn't a business at the time. So this is where, so I have a younger brother. His name's Mark. And he's 2 years younger than me. And right about now, he starts working for us. And we're like, hey, we want him to be a partner. I wanted him to be a partner. Paul and Mark and I all get along really well. Paul was okay with it. And so we were like, but we can't bring Mark on. I was running the framing at the time. Paul was running landscaping. We were like, it doesn't make sense to bring on another partner unless we have something for him to do. And so then, you know, Mark works for us. He frames for us for a while. And there was a sprinkler repair company that had changed hands twice in our church. And it came up for sale. And the dude called us up. He's like, hey, I've heard you guys bought businesses in the past. You interested in buying this? We told him no initially. He wanted too much. And then it didn't sell. And we gave him an offer. He accepted it. And so we bought a sprinkler repair company. And to the younger kids out there, buying a business that doesn't have a website, that has been run pretty poorly, that's not priced correctly, that's run as a job and not a business, like, great business model. If you can find someone who's like has integrity and has run something or built a base of clients somewhere and they're willing to sell it to you, go buy it. Like, it is a good use of your money. I think the hardest stage of a business is getting it from 0 to 10, as opposed to from 10 to, I guess if we're saying the scale is 100, we've never got any business to 100. Hopefully someday we will, but maybe 10 to 20, right? It's easier to go from 10 to 20 as opposed to 1 to 10. And so we bought Beeline, and that's where Mark came in. Mark bought into the landscaping and the construction business, came in as a partner. So now there's three of us and we're all working together. And, worked pretty well. We kind of ran all three companies together and kind of moved guys around. We were running probably at the most, we had 10 employees going for all three businesses. And that's when framing took an absolute hit. And so this would have been probably 2021. The average price for framing was $450 at the time. It dropped to $320 per square foot for these houses we were building. And you couldn't make money. Like, we were not hardly making any money. But I started a social media account at the time. I was like, hey, the jobs were slow. So I posted a couple things to TikTok. The videos did really well. And I was like, well, that's kind of cool. Like, maybe we'll just kind of start posting some content. At the time, TikTok was paying really well. And so I was like, if I can get to the monetization baseline, then we could make money that way. So that's when we started doing the social media stuff as well. And that was really fun. I think we learned a lot of things, kind of just posting content and figuring out how to, you know, balance content and working. We're still trying to figure that out because it's not easy. When you film, it takes about double as long to do things as when you just go out and work. And so there's a trade-off there. But yeah, went through. We ended up selling the landscaping company. And at the time, okay, I got to back up. So one of the things that we wanted to do is I wanted to land commercial contracts because we were like, okay, we're going to take the landscaping business. We don't want to do this forever. And we think the construction market is insulated enough. And so what we did is I basically just went around and landed commercial contracts. So walked into these apartment complexes, had no idea what I was doing. It was just like, hey, we're a landscaping company. When is the bid date? I want to turn in a bid for your landscaping. It doesn't look very good. I think we could do a lot better job and we could probably save you some money. And so went around, I landed, I think just literally doing that. I think we had $260,000 of commercial projects or commercial maintenance locked in on 2-year contracts. Mm-hmm. So that was sweet and brought our baseline up by quite a bit. Then we started a second landscaping crew. They would just go do commercial jobs for like 3 days a week. And then they would go do, you know, odd, you know, trimming and bush and landscaping installs, different things like that. And so.
And your primary workforce is kids from church. That are homeschooled.
Yep. 100%. Like homeschooled kids from church. They didn't all go to our church. It was just like, we wanted to hire kids who had some amount of honesty and integrity and their parents valued hard work. And so we found that the homeschool church going kids were, that's where that was. And we kind of got a reputation where it was like, hey, if you want to go make $30 an hour, you can go work for them and they'll pay you $30 an hour. Which is a lot more than, and we got told we were crazy. When we were framing, we started paying guys $30 an hour. And we got told by a couple guys who run like a really sizable construction company out here, you kids are crazy. We don't ever pay guys that much. And they offer benefits. So it's a little bit different. We weren't offering benefits. But they're like,
those are 1099 guys, basically.
Well, they were on W-2s, but we just didn't offer like insurance plans for them. Like, we obviously paid workman's comp, but not like, we're not offering dental and healthcare and different things like that. So we got some flack for that. But these kids who were in high school, if they worked hard, we'd pay them what they were worth. And so we kind of had our pick of the litter, which was pretty sweet. So then we keep just kind of chugging along. The framing market takes a dip. We decide we might get out of framing. And so we're sitting there for a little bit trying to decide, well, this is when social media takes off. And YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok, we all were monetized on YouTube and TikTok. And Instagram, the monetization, we've made like 99 cents off of Instagram still to this day. But we actually started making decent money through AdSense. And so we had a month around this time in our businesses where I think we did like 10 grand in just like ad share revenue. And so we were like, well, you know, we can run a business if we can make 10 grand a month doing that. And that was pretty much the highest we ever got for AdSense. But we started rolling in brand deals. We started getting work from social media. And it was like, wow, this is kind of working. And so, and I'm a little bit of a nerd about that. Like I like editing videos. I like the science behind retention. And people don't quite understand this, but social media is just a retention game. It's not about getting the likes. It's not really about the followers. If you can make a video where people will watch it for 80% of the video, it will go viral. Like, people don't understand that. They'll be like, I made a great video and it just didn't go viral. It's like, well, people don't care about your video. That's what Instagram just told you. If you can figure out how to keep people for 80% of that video, it will get 1 million views. Guaranteed. Well, yeah, if you post it three different times.
Kept people on Instagram for that amount of time. You kept people on Instagram for that amount of time. That's what they're trying to keep people on platform.
That's all they're trying to do is how long can we keep everyone scrolling? This guy kept them for 80% of his video. We need more of his videos because he's good at keeping people on our platform. And then every 6 videos, there's an ad. And so we're helping keep people on their platform so that they can go watch those ads, which is how everyone is paid. And so it's if you think about it, like, everyone understands an hourly rate. Well, just think of social media the same way. If you can steal 30 seconds of someone's time, but you can steal 100,000 people's 30 seconds. That's a lot of time on an hourly rate, but we don't think about it that way. But that's how all these advertisers think about it. And so that's how you have to think about it. So when you're filming a video, it's like, okay, what's in the background? What am I wearing? Is there contrast here? Am I saying interesting things? Am I talking fast enough? Should I talk slower? Should I use more intonation? Like, there's all these different things that are really fun. How many times should the camera change angles? Should you smile more? Should you smile less? You know, all the different little nerdy things, but it does make a difference. And I think that's where the younger generation does have a bit of a advantage, is a lot of these kids doom scroll. Well, if you turn doom scrolling, and don't doom scroll, kids, but if you're gonna do it, at least pay attention to why you're watching the videos. Like, what did that person do that kept me there? Oh, that's interesting. Okay, maybe I should try that. And then if you are a producer, not a consumer, and you transition, I think that's an important thing to do for any teenager who's doing anything. It's like, how can you produce and not consume? But it's kind of this idea, well, if you're going to consume, at least make yourself better because of it, and at least gain a skill from it. And that was something that we did. We saw that, okay, I think we can bring in work. There's no general contractor on social media in Idaho. Like, no one owns this space. I think we understand social media really well. Let's first build followers. And then we always knew we wanted to be a general contractor. We're like, the goal is to go build spec homes and then go general for people, right? And so we're like, we'll build a follower base, and then we'll do that through viral content. We'll do that through maybe even being a little silly, doing different things that get views, get followers. And then over time, as we kind of grow and learn, we can transition that into a more serious brand. And so that was always our long-term plan. And so that's worked pretty well. We started getting jobs. People know us. They can, like, if you get 100,000 views on your videos, like, I go into Home Depot and I get recognized because people see blue collar content. They watch it, and then they see me walking through them. Oh, you're the dude. Yeah, whatever, you know? So there's value in that. And so we're kind of still in the middle of transitioning from framing content into general contracting content. But at the time, we're trying to figure out how to make the framing thing work. And so we basically scaled back down to one crew, and just, we only framed for content, right? And so we went, built a spec home, did some different things, made a little bit of money on our spec home. We didn't make that much money on our spec home, but it was a win because we proved we can build a house, right? And we learned a lot of lessons. And so then when I'm going out trying to sell someone, hey, I can build you an ADU, they came and walked our spec home, and they were like, yeah, this looks like a good house. You can build us an ADU. We get an ADU. Then you go get a secondary residence. Then you're just going to build someone a house ground up. And it just literally worked that way, where it's like, hey, people can come see the work you're doing. They can see your social media following. They like you if you're a decent person and you actually care about them. And it's a whole sales process. You know this. I mean, the amount of time from when someone calls you to when you're actually breaking ground, like, for us, it's like a year. Like, it takes so long for them to go get bids from everyone, then them to decide to go with you, then for you guys to design your prints and then push it through permitting. Like, when you're breaking ground, it's a year after your first conversation, right? And so there's a lot that goes into that process, but starting with a spec home was really good for us because we were able to show, hey, we've done this, here's some pictures, and then people trust you if you've done it before. It's gonna be pretty hard for, at the time, a 22-year-old to convince some person to give their life savings to this kid to go build their secondary house or whatever it is, right? And so we were like, we got to build a spec home. That was really good for us. And again, all this comes back to, we bought the landscaping company on time, and we bought the sprinkler repair company on time, but we paid the landscaping off in 3 months, and then we paid the sprinkler repair company off. I think we bought it in maybe August, and then we paid it off by October. So we came in with half down, and then we paid it off in October.
Where's that money coming from?
What's that?
Where's that money coming from? Like, who is it? Friends and family that's helping you do it, or is it like financing the buy?
We made them do owner carry. And who we bought it from, we're like, hey, sell it to us on time, right? Yeah. And so that worked pretty well for us. And then it just gave us enough time for, like, at this point, our construction and our landscaping company are funding everything. Like, the sprinkler repair company was not going to pay itself off that fast. But the other things we were doing, we were just kind of, like, funneling money we were making into, you know, buying other things. And that's something that I, like, am a huge proponent of. I know, like, if you go read 10X or Grant Cardone stuff, everyone's, like, really big on debt. And to an extent, I am as well, right? Like, if you use debt properly, you can take advantage of inflation. And that can be your best hedge against the economy kind of going to crap, right? So you should have debt, but you should be careful about how you take it on. And especially, like, when you're starting a business, there's so many things that you're not going to understand and you're not going to have right. And if you can buy your trucks cash, if you can buy your tools cash, then you don't have these payments that you have to make, right? And that's how I've seen so many people go out of business, is they go and they take loans on trucks. They take loans on things. And it's like, dude, you'd be better off working your butt off. You'd be better driving, like, an old, you know, V10 or V8 that's from 2006 and just driving the thing into the ground, buying it for $4,000, buying a crappy trailer. Like, it's not all, like, it's, there is some amount of presenting yourself well that is good. Like, in the general contracting industry, no one wants someone to build their house who has a crappy truck, right? There's some realities there, but you don't need a brand new truck. And then if you're running a landscaping company, you don't need a $20,000 truck. You can run off of a $4,000 truck that's white and easy and a single cab, right? And you can buy those really cheap. And so I'm a big proponent of, if you don't have the pressure of a loan, you can save that money. And maybe your looks will suffer a little bit, but in the long term, that's served us really well. And when we've gone up and down in terms of revenue, we've been able to always float it because our baseline is, well, we're just not taking salaries this month, right? Like, all three of us just aren't going to get paid, but that's okay. We've saved enough money to where we can do that. And if the business doesn't make money, we clearly did something wrong, but we're not out of business because we had $6,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 of payments we had to make. That's another thing. I'm like, if you're going to get into business,
essentially that image that you're presenting is kind of like that technical charismatic relationship. If you have charisma, nobody cares about the fact that your truck's used, you know,
exactly,
because you're building trust. Like, is it for, first impression when the truck pulls up, you know, and you don't want there to be a giant oil leak on the driveway when you pull away. So you're having to replace pavers or whatever, you know, but like, the first impression is stronger is the interpersonal dynamic. And then, you know, obviously the flip side of not going out of business when it, you know, for me, when I started my business, I was 32 and I went and got an Amex and they gave me a $25,000 limit, you know, right off the bat. And I like bought sexy tools and I carried a balance on that thing for 4 years, you know, with five kids and two mortgages and whatever. And so, like, I think that's a huge kind of thing, is that in our consumer culture, it will tell you, you need the bling, you need to, you know, whatever. It's like, no, you need to be able to do good work and be able to sell. And then 100%. Again, having that $4,000 truck, you know, like, you want it to not, you want it to start, but also you can have four $4,000 trucks for a lot cheaper than that. You know, I mean, I went and looked at the four lot, $110,000, bro.
I know.
Who is spending $110,000 on a truck, you know?
A lot of people.
Yeah, a lot.
A lot of contractors. Like, you go make money and you're like, I can make that payment. That's a sweet truck, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy to me. You know, I still drive a 2013 F-250 Power Stroke. Works good, looks good. You can show up to a job. People say, that's a good looking truck. Like, he takes care of it. But I don't think I get downgraded because I'm not driving a 2025, you know, Power Stroke. Like, it just
vanity. It's a self-enforcing vanity metric. And you're telling yourself you need it. And it's like, no, you don't, you know. And for me, like, I'm like, I gotta go and pull a dump trailer today, but it's like, it's rusting out, bro. And one of the tires is flat. You know, and it's on a $3 million house, you know, but I think it's the opposite. I'm like, what's this guy for a high net worth client? And they see you pull up, they know what that truck costs. They know what that trailer, like, I think it's the reverse. I think they're like, this guy's charging me too much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, think it actually pays the opposite side. Or this guy is, you know, up to his eyeballs in debt. Like, I think there's a responsibility. I don't know. I don't have a lot of data on that, but I'm like, I want the job to be mint, and it doesn't matter that I got a rusty dump trailer, you know, and it doesn't matter that I got a t-shirt on, you know, like I'm building your job. Let's get this done. You know, I get it done, and you know, and sometimes I like to wear flip-flops, dadgummit.
Yeah, and again, if you build that rapport with those people, right, and we're doing the same thing, it's like they're okay if you show up in a little truck, you know, a little Ford Maverick or whatever it is, right? Like, you can build that. If you build your reputation and you've worked through some things and they understand who they are, they're not really looking at, oh, like, that truck's from 2006 versus 2012 or 2014, till it gets to a line. And you're totally right, because when we're hiring subs, if some dude pulls up in a brand new 6.7, I'm like, either he's going to be out of business in a year, or he's charging too much and I can't use him. Mm-hmm. So you go get their bids, and they'll tell you. And I'm like, well, I'll take
advantage. Or he's not paying his guys $3 an hour, and you're never going to get the same guys. You're never going to be able to build culture. He's putting it into his truck, and his guys all hate him too, because they're all scraping by, you know?
Yeah. No, for sure. So someday I'll own a new truck, but not for a while. So, but that whole thing, like, you need new tools, you need the best tools. Like, dude, Facebook Marketplace is incredible. You can get a lot of stuff for a really good price. And like, we own
a lot of guys that bought $100,000 trucks and need to sell everything cheap now because they went out of business.
100%. You can go buy a 2021, which those don't have good transmissions, but you can go buy a 2023 for a lot less. You can go buy a 2025 or whatever. So I'm a big proponent of go use Facebook Marketplace, go cash out your stuff. Because if you look at everything that you buy as an investment, it's like, if you go buy a $150 drill at Home Depot, it's going to take you longer to pay that thing off, or for it to pay itself off, as it would if you went and bought a $70 drill on Facebook Marketplace that was bought 6 months ago and never used, right? Like, everything, every place that you put your money, there's always got to be a return on it, right? And so it's easier to get a better return if you buy a lower ticket item, right? And that's the easy way to do that, is by buying used. Like, go figure out how to be really smart. And I did that all growing up. Figured out that there's a delta, like, through the farming cycle, you could buy grain drills in the winter for really, really cheap. And then you could fix them up. There were different things. You could tell how they were used. And you're like, oh, this one's crap. No. This one, it's mostly mechanical. We'll be able to get it working through the winter. And then I could sell it. So I could buy it for $500 in the winter. And come spring, I could sell it for $3,000-$4,000. It was like doing that type of stuff where you can see the value in the tools. You can see the value in the equipment, right? Like, we buy jump trailers all the time because through the winter, people have a payment on them. They're like, I'll just sell it for what the rest of my payment is, right? I'll give it to you for $6,000. And you're like, yeah, that thing's worth $10,000 all day. I'll buy it and sell it in the spring. And if you're doing it cash, you don't have the pressure to sell it by a certain time. You can use it. We rent our dump trailers out. So we, like, if you did have a payment, like, we would be making the payment just off of renting them out. But it's like, that equipment pays for itself. And then over time, maybe you're kind of working up, like, kind of what we did. We bought a bunch of crappy concrete dump trailers early on. And then you kind of slowly flip them, make some money, and work them into nicer dump trailers. And now we're, you know, we have pretty nice trailers. We use them for our job site bins. That works well. We don't pay people to come clean the jobs and come take it away. We do that part of it, because that's half of what a general contractor does in terms of, like, daily work, is just cleaning other people's crap up. But it works pretty good. And there's just, so again, when you're buying something, get a discount on it if you can, man. Like, that saves you so much, especially if you're buying cash, right? So I don't know. There's a lot of different things like that, where I think if you can look at money as, hey, a dollar now is worth $45 when I'm 50 years old. How can I save a dollar, and how can I be putting it towards things that is actually making me money? And when you go run those, if you run up a credit card, like, and I have a credit card, I'm not all opposed to credit cards. You need to have them. If you're going to buy a house, you have to have a credit score. Don't go buy into that. No one should ever have a credit card. I'm just saying, pay it off. But the interest that you pay on even like $5,000 a month, it's crazy. You're gonna go you know, pay 20% on that, and people don't realize how much that, oh, it's only $400 and I'm getting $5,000. It's like, nah, dude, that's really bad. Like, you can't, you do not want to be paying that every month, because $400 is a lot of money. That's a lot of drills. That's a lot of sawzalls, right? Mm-hmm. So it, and to your point earlier where you were like, yeah, I ran up a credit card. I think it is different. You have, when you started a business at 32, as opposed to when you're 16 or 18 starting a business, you have just a lot more life experience. You understand numbers, you understand money, you understand flow a lot more. And even like interpersonal skills, like things that we did that we lost money on for being too arrogant or not doing the right thing, not understanding what direction to go when you're posed with this question, you're going to have a lot better hold on that. Like, wisdom comes with age. And so I'm not as opposed to older people pulling loans out, because it's like, if you're really sure this is going to work and you need a loan because you've got a family and you're like, we're going to make this happen, I'm like, that's worth the risk to me.
Well, and I put myself in a position too, where we're living in a bus. We have, we bought more land than we should have, because I'm like, sure, if I want to set my kids up like your dad did, I got to take. And so I'm just was basically like, it's going to suck.
Yep.
But, and I'm just going to have to work, and I know I will. Like, it's essentially put myself on a deadline in a sense. I put myself like, I have to make it work. And it does suck at times, but again, you have that confidence that you're going to go out and do it. And I know I got the skill to do it too. Yeah. But at the same time, like, you don't know what the economy is going to do. And that's essentially where we were at this last year. We were just kind of like, all right, there's no reason we should be doing milking cows. Like, sure, my wife should not be milking cows right now. I can buy that cheaper. Construction makes a ton of money. I should not have this Airbnb that's soaking up all this time and is $1 million in debt. So I was like, I got rid of $1 million in debt. I got rid of the milking cow. We pay for what we want to eat. I go pick it up from a fridge. We don't have to clean the milk. Like, it basically was like all these things that feel cool and like are kind of flashy, but ultimately are killing me, because I have to do all these things, you know. And my wife too, like, I haven't even talked about kind of like the family dynamic to this, but realizing like, I don't want her to have to do something every day that is $32 gross product, you know, like it's ridiculous, you know. And I'll let somebody else, and even hearing these margins on some of this stuff, I'm just like, it's nothing compared to remodeling, you know. Yeah. And it's just like, as much as it sucks, and you know, for me too, like, remodeling, there's always rich people that want to modify their house. So you just got to be the best at remodeling, and even in downturns. But for me, I guess I'm struggling is for remodeling, I can't just give this to a homeschool kid right off the street. And so that's that side of things. I'm trying to figure out a way, pipeline wise, to start putting my own kids to work. Because it's complex to do a remodel. It takes years of experience to understand how a house works and not messing up and, you know, all these things. So I've been trying to figure out how to add something that's a service type thing that is where we put kids when they first come in, and then we let them, you know, we don't have stuff to do. And so that's, you know, when I saw you had, you know, landscaping business and this stuff, I'm like, you know, I don't want to buy another business necessarily, but I'm like, how can I have a labor pool that's gamely employed that we can just, all right, now we're going over to this job today and you guys are going to demo it, you know, or whatever. That's kind of been what I'm thinking about is the lower skill entry point kind of thing that I can systematize better. I don't know. I don't know what I'll do. Part of me wants to do gutters. What do you think about gutters?
It's interesting. So we have private equity is hitting gutters pretty hard around here. They're basically consolidating all the little small businesses. I honestly don't know how they make money, because what we get our gutters put on for is like $1,400 for like a 1800 square foot house. And and that's like putting gutters everywhere. So to me, the margins seem maybe not huge, but also maybe the raw materials aren't that much. They can do it so fast and they got the machines right in the van and they crank it out incredibly quickly. So I know those machines are expensive. I've never really looked into starting it, but there's work. Gutters go bad. And that's the other thing. When you're starting a business, you're like, hey, is there recurring work here? Yeah, every 15 years, 20 years, your gutters are going to go bad. So you're probably, they're going to not clean them out and the leaves are going to overload them and then they're going to bend outwards and they're not going to hold the water and you got to get them replaced. And it's like, hey, if there's any sort of reoccurring like life cycle to whatever you're doing, it'll probably be a decent business model. Mm-hmm. So, but it is interesting because we're seeing gutter prices go up because private equity is coming in and buying up all these different companies and keeping them separate, but they're running them all together. And so that's actually what we're trying to do with our sprinkler repair company right now is we're going to buy a second sprinkler repair company. There's a guy who's moving out of state. And so we're going to buy a second one and we're going to run two side by side so that we just own more market share, right? Like you, if you can be the top two spots on Google, like our sprinkler repair company is top in Nampa, at least in our city, in our location, it's top spot in Boise. We're like top seven in Caldwell, top four, whatever. But and you can only do so much when you get further away from your home address on Google. Mm-hmm. But the more you can own, the more locations you can own, the better you're going to do. And people call that top spot. That's just what they do. I think we bring in 15 calls a day off of our website and off of a Google profile. Like, don't sleep on Google right now. The other thing is, like, I think we're getting about 2,000 impressions a month from AI search. Because if you build out a really good website and you give AI unique information to your specific niche that it can't get from other general sites, they are going to source you as their site, right? They're going to push your site forward. And when they source information from you, they also rank you higher. They use Yelp too. They're like ChatGPT is using Yelp's map, which is super annoying because Yelp is kind of difficult to work with. But like these other chats are generally, you know,
they're sucking information from every source that they can. 100%. And if you're the one that's providing the information, you're getting the link. At least they're crediting, hey, we got this from this website.
So like our homepage for our sprinkler repair company brings in, I think over the last 28 days, let me just pull this up really fast, but I think it's brought in 6,000. I could be totally wrong. I don't want to spitball here and be wrong, but it's brought in maybe 100 leads. I wrote two blog posts that did pretty well. They're bringing in 100 leads each as well. And so like it's just giving, we're in a weird phase right now where things are transitioning. It's not all going to be the same, but I'm like, dude, get at the front of pushing information. Like if you know anything, get it out on the internet. And a lot of people are like, as a general contractor, well, you don't want to give your tips and tricks. It's like, we're past that stage. Because if you're not going to give your tips and tricks, someone else will, and they'll get the credit from chat, right? And so go be the guy who built the blog post talking about why you need this sort of visqueen, why you should use this underlayment, why you should use Zip versus Tyvek, right? Like if you're pushing that information out, you're going to be the source for it. You're going to get the advantage when people quit using Google and they start using ChatGPT and they go, hey, what contractor should build my house? Well, this guy has a lot of information. You should use him. He's number one and he's got 100 five-star reviews, right? Like that's the type of thing that I'm telling everyone, like go figure out how to build a good website right now. And I slept on that for way too long because I was like, dude, websites are from 2006. Like we don't need those. You do. And even more now with the new kind of evolution of AI and whatnot. So.
What you're at right now, what are you thinking for going forward? Like you did mention buying another sprinkling business, but like sprinkler repair business, like how are you looking at right now and saying, I'm not doing well at this and I'm trying to figure out like what's the things you're trying to figure out and do, you know?
Yeah. So a couple things. We got out of landscaping. We don't landscape anymore. We sold that company. We split the commercial and the residential up and got rid of it. I don't like landscaping. It's the easiest way for a 15-year-old to go make 150 grand a year. It just is. Like, it's so easy to make so much money mowing yards. But it's such a hard business to scale. And you have no flexibility because you got to mow the yards every week, right? So we have sprinkler repair and we have construction. And one of the things that we've kind of learned over time is like, if you split too much of your energy between things, you end up not doing anything well. And so my younger brother runs Beeline. He's a really good tech. He runs the guys. And then Paul runs construction in terms of he's our job site super. We don't have any employees for the construction. construction side of things. Because like you said, it's so hard to keep people, to teach them how to do things right. And we're still, we don't have everything figured out. We're still trying to learn and have high quality and figure these things out. And it's just easier not to have employees. So we bring in some subs to help us when we frame houses and stuff. But we run the businesses separately. Blue Ridge makes a lot of money because you go build a house and you're like, you can make money when you build a house, right? But it's not as much of like a cash flowing business model because it kind of comes in chunks, right? Like you're like, okay, we finally got a house. Now we're building it. Now we get paid out at the end. It just kind of depends on if it's cost plus or if it's baked in over time. It depends on, you understand all how you can get paid different ways, but sometimes it's in chunks and you don't have cash flow. So then Beeline's kind of our cash flow side where the vision there is to build it, build a culture and run it like a business, right? And we've never done that. We've run a lot of jobs, but Beeline is to the point where we have so much work coming in because of our website, because we've been in business for a long time. We figured some things out where if we can figure out how to build a culture where we can pay our employees enough to keep them around and come back every year, we would like to be running, like right now we're running 3 trucks right now, kind of 2.5 trucks right now. When we buy this business, we'll be running 5 trucks and scale. We're just trying to figure out how to scale a business, build a culture, and give upside to employees to where they feel like they're kind of owners in a sense. And it's just difficult with service-based businesses. We're trying to figure it out. But the idea with Beeline is to scale it where we've got levels of management. We want Mark to move out of like our operations manager role, and we're going to bring in our top tech as that next year. And then we're going to run employees underneath him and like things like implement SOPs through the whole business. This is when you clean your truck. This is how we operate. This is how we talk to people. This is how we bid jobs, and giving good employees more autonomy. And then like this year, we decided, all right, every employee who comes back every year, we're going to give them a $2 raise. Like, they will get that. I am convinced we'll be able to pay it. And if you give them a $2 raise, there's like a magnet there where they know, hey, we're getting $32 an hour now, but we'll get $34 an hour next year. And the year after that, $36 an hour. And I'm like, we raise our prices more than that every year. And it is such a pain to train new employees, like such a pain. And to implement like, okay, this is how we operate. This is how we treat customers. No, 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 you can't operate that way. You operate this way. Oh, this guy doesn't show up on time, but he's a good employee, so we can't keep him. Like those type of things. So we're trying to pay our guys better. We're trying to figure out how to build a really solid culture and implement like actual management levels on the Beeline side. So we'll see how that goes. There's a lot of learning that'll go into it, but things like we've never done weekly like meetings or anything like that. We just kind of run by the seat of our pants. Hey, how's things going? Are we getting enough leads? What are you doing? What are you doing? And it's just kind of all stuff run off like texting. And that's not how you build a culture. We kind of found that out the hard way, where it's like employees don't feel like they're a part of anything if they don't know what's going on. And so figuring out how to not share too much, but make them feel a part, give them at least some metric to where they can make more money if they perform well. Those are all things we're trying to figure out right now. And we don't have a monopoly on it, especially because with Beeline, it's a 9 month a year business where we're running, you know, sprinklers only work for, you know, end of February, beginning of March to the end of October and beginning of November. And then you've got dead time. So figuring out how to keep employees through that, how does that all work? It's a little bit of a pain. So maybe we need to do sprinkler, or maybe we need to do like Christmas lights or something like that. But we've done snow removal in the past, but that's kind of a pain. So, and the liability is pretty high. So yeah, scaling, we're really trying to build a culture with Beeline. That's the thing. We want to build it. We want to build something that we can sell. And the way you do that is you build a profitable company that the owners are not doing all the work. You have to have employees in place. You have to have management in place. And so whether we'd sell it or not, maybe not, but we want something that a private investor could come in and say, there's value there. That has been run well and there's systems in place. And currently we don't have that. So that's our next spot.
Well, and selfishly, that means you're doing more work or less work. I mean, it runs better without you and you have time, you know, it's less tied to you spinning the plates.
Yep. Now with Blue Ridge, the goal has always kind of been, we have a large social media following, and we are to the point where we have like 8 builds in process right now, which is a lot. But they're all in that, or 4 of them are in the actual building stage, and then the other 4 are like coming up, right? And one of them, and then there's a development project that we're working on as well, but that's going to happen later. So we're just trying to figure out how to be really good builders, be efficient builders, and do a really, really good job. And like, we're young to this, right? The really good general contractors are all older. They've been doing this for 10 years, and we've been doing this for 2 years. And so how do we differentiate ourselves? How do we keep getting jobs? And then how do we do a really good job with the work that the Lord has blessed us with so far? And I think that's a big part of it. Like, if the Lord blesses you with work, you got to do a good job. Otherwise, like, you're not taking advantage of the talents that he's given you, right? So it's kind of there. We have a lot to learn, but we're just kind of out there trying to run things on the Blue Ridge side as lean as possible, where, hey, if we want to go do spec builds, we can do that because we're not spending the money in the account, right? We're just building it, and then we can go buy land, we can go do things. And so that's kind of the long-term play there. And then I think social media is like, everyone should be doing social media. It is.
What are your favorite people to get information on how to do that better? Like, what do you have, a people you're reading kind of continuously or following, or any, or just do it and learn the same way you framed a house?
Just do it. I tell people, post videos, pay attention to those retention graphs, look at all the data they give you, and you'll be able to, if you showed me a graph of a video, I could tell you exactly, show me the video and show me a graph, I can tell you why it did bad or why it did good, right? Just become a student to social media. I haven't found someone who's super good at it. I'm sure they're out there, but it's so specific to your niche, right? Are you trying to build a personal brand? Are you trying to build a business brand? Are you trying to be a trad wife on social media? Are you trying to run a dog training company? Like, there's, everything is going to have a little bit of a different angle. And so it's hard to just go pick some coach or pick some video. We've learned it all through trial and error. No one helped us. There's not really content out there that's very good, other than the easiest way to learn is go look at the viral videos. And if it's in your niche, like you're in construction, go look at all the general contractors and what videos got a lot of views. Why did it get a lot of views? Go figure that out, right? And then just go copy the ideas that they're doing. Like, okay, they had this video structure that does well. People will stay for a video that leaves an open hook at the beginning, and then there's a long pay, or there's a long process in between, and then there's a payoff at the end, right? People will stay for that. That is a formula that has always worked. So how am I going to do that in my specific niche, right? And so the trainers out there are the people doing the same thing, but in Austin, Texas, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what we've done. I have thought about starting an agency for social media coaching, because I've helped several other accounts grow to anywhere from 5 to 30,000 followers. And it, once you kind of start figuring it out, you can see it and you can help people. And there's value in probably having a coach. We just haven't done it that way. So but everyone should be doing it. Don't have analysis paralysis. It's embarrassing to post the first time, because you're like, oh, I have 300 friends and they're all people I know, and I'm talking like I'm an influencer. It's like, yeah, get over it. Like, it just is what it is. This is where life is moving. If you're worried about
or being self-conscious that other people are watching you while you're walking down the road, it's like, hey, you know, you do your thing, I'll do mine, and we'll see. Exactly. We'll check back in 10 years and see who was right. You know, you could be embarrassed by other people and people thinking the wrong thing. I mean, I get crap from podcasting, you know, or whatever. Oh, sure. And I'm just this, you know, fine, don't do it. Yep. You know, like,
I'm okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. it's funny. We got a lot of crap early on for posting stuff on social media. And then it transitioned really fast into people saying, wow, how much money are you making every month? How are you doing that? How'd you do that? What happened? It's like, dude, All it takes is one video to go from, oh, that dude's trying to be an influencer, that's embarrassing, to, oh, wow, that dude's an influencer, I kind of want to do that. Like, he's making a lot of money doing that.
I'm thinking I got to just give my son some leash to do that. because I think that that's understanding too, like what's the goal with it too. If the goal is to try to get more workers and have people that are excited about joining the crew, he's going to do a good job, you know, getting that out and talking about it too. So,
and I've struggled with that because I've got a son and then a daughter on the way, and we live in a weird time because we're sitting here and I think we're just starting to see, like, we're at the first life cycle of kids who had easy access to porn from, like, and sorry, I don't know if this is allowed on your podcast or not.
It's fine. Yeah.
Okay. Easy access to porn. So we're seeing kids who are 6 years old, who were three clicks away from porn, and now they're 20. And there are some pretty serious effects to that, right? And I think parents didn't understand how easy it was. There was some naivete that went with it. But now we're like, I'm seeing young guys who have no drive, who are into stuff they should not be into and are really ruining their lives because they haven't built self-control and their parents didn't help them build self-control. And so it's like, okay, so you need to police that. But we also live in a time where it's like building websites, working with ChatGPT, posting social media content, being like someone who puts out stuff or a performer is really important, and training your kids on that. But how do you do that while still maintaining like moral standards? And because it has never been, immorality has never been closer, right, to us, because we've got these things that it can be right there. It doesn't matter what parents' guide you've got on there. Kids will find a way around it. Adults will find a way around it.
And that's back to, I think that this is the thing about it too, is having discussions about it, you know? But the reality is, it's not the young men either. Like, it's not just the young men. Yeah. Like, it's, if you look, if any of the statistics about church stuff, but you don't have pastors talking about it, you don't have like it. And I think just articulating the way that God has set things up is for your good, you know, and making sure that, and just truly believing in your heart, when I take this into me, it is not good. When Proverbs chapter 5 is great. You know, you're dispersing your strength is just leaving you and going out in the streets, you know? Yeah. And so ultimately it's got to go back to, do you believe that God's way is best or not? Yeah. And then guess what? If you listen to Huberman or you listen to all these other people, God's way actually makes you a beast, you know?
Yeah.
Not doing all these things and putting it into work, you know? And I don't know if you follow Michael Foster too. He's talking about that's an engine. You put it, you combine the fire to the piston, and it's horsepower, you know, or if you let the fire go in the woods. And so I think that's, you can think about it and say, hey, I got to put all that stuff on. Everybody's found their way around it. You know, I was in the same thing, you know? Yeah. So it's making sure that kids understand that they're not broken because they have to war against it, and giving them the open and honest conversations, you know? And I was talking to a guy last night, and he was saying he's in a biblical counseling class at a seminary, and there were women in the class, and they weren't able to talk about pornography, you know? And that's the kind of thing. It's like, you say, hey, can you talk about this? No, like that's, I have a episode, solo episode that I did on it. That's like, hey, you know, like it's something that I've struggled with, and I actually know that it's poison. Like until you actually believe it is, so you actually, you know, understand that it's then you're just not going to do it, you know? Yeah. Like, so is God's way right or not, ultimately, you know? And then the social media, I go to the Sermon on the Mount. Your light is not supposed to be put under a bushel. You're supposed to put it on a lampstand. You're a city set on a hill. So for Christians right now, that is how we are a city set on a hill. Not the only thing, because you can run down that route and you can be like the mom that's posting all these YouTubes and her kids are props. They're not, you know, immortal souls that she's trying to cultivate for God's glory. But for sure, we have to be doing it. The Mormons are doing it really well, you know? I mean, that's how it goes. Like you have to do it.
Yeah.
And figure it out. It's you got to do it.
Yep, no, for sure. And there's something to be well, and but this is the hard part. I think as you get older, it's easier for that wisdom to come and you say, that is poison. That is bad. And I have been around long enough to see the effects of that, right? Like I can see it in other people's lives. I can see it in my life, and I don't want any part of that. And that's kind of like a sanctification process. But for your kids, you're trying to set them up. And so this 12-year-old boy is like, he could be doing stuff online, but how much leeway do you give them? And like foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. They don't have the wisdom to project what this leads to. And you're, as a parent, you're trying to instill that, hey, read Proverbs 5. Hey, let's talk through these things. But I know from experience, my dad did that as much as anyone. And you still, it's just like it takes so long for that to take hold. And maybe part of that is you've got to learn from experience. But as a dad now, I'm like, oh, I want my kids to understand how the world works, and I want them to be producers, but I want to spare them from this. And you can't spare, everyone's gonna
I don't
run
know
from
if this will
sin,
help
deal
at
with
all,
sin.
but one of the ways that we have kind of solved it is a big old Mac iMac that's in the living room. You know,
Okay.
everybody can see it. You can't go off it. Like the mobile aspect of taking it into the bathroom or taking it upstairs in the attic or kind of whatever, like create that where it's like, hey, you can use technology, but it's right here in the middle of the house, you know, and people can see it, you know, all the time. You know, and maybe even taking a step further, you know, like that's, we think about it too. We're going to leave the house, leaving them unattended with it. You know, maybe it's, hey, it's in the middle of the house and you got a security camera on the screen, you know, and it's like, you're just accountable to that. And, but this is a tool that you're going to get to use and you're just, there's a shorter leash right now, you know?
No, that's smart. So it's just up against a wall facing the living area or whatever. That's
Yeah,
probably,
and
and then
that's the thing is that,
no
hey, you know,
devices.
iPads, all the iPads stay accountable. They don't go up into these different places. And it's just saying, hey, you know, you can use it. You can listen to an audiobook, but you're sitting on the couch right here. You know, it's laying on the table, whatever. Like, and just being a little bit more intentional about you don't take it to your room. You don't take it in the bathroom. You don't, you know, it's just let's have the technology here and let's use it as a tool, but let's also realize, hey, you know, and then in a sense too, like, we want a culture where you can say, I messed up. I'm sorry, you know, and it not being you failed at life. It's like, no, that's actually better that you came and
For
said,
sure.
I screwed up. I'm sorry. Help me out. Like we can work with that, you know?
Right. All day. All day.
And that's the same in business. You took accountability for it and, you know, we can make it happen.
For sure. I think that's solid. Well, that'll be until someone comes up with a better idea, that'll probably be what we plan to do. So your kids don't have phones.
My 17-year-old son does, and my 16-year-old daughter does. But even then, it's like, hey, put it on the, which it's pretty great too, because my son actually just switched his number to a flip phone. Because he's like, I'm looking at my screen time and I don't like it. And, you know, and so he was telling me the other day, you know, like, hey, my stats were way down. And,
Good for him.
you know, and so I'm like, all right, you're thinking along the right lines, you know,
Good for
and
him.
you don't want to be, you want to be a master of it. But yeah, I mean, our joke is you don't get a phone until 25, you know. But again, yeah, we're all in on the, you know, AI and website stuff and figuring all that out. So I think what I need to do is just, I mean, even that was one of the things I said at the beginning of this. I want my son to be able to listen to it. I got to figure out how to give him a bigger leash on producing stuff for us and saying,
For
hey, we're going
sure.
to tie this in, you know, conversions too. I also told him, I was like, hey, I'm going to give you all our clients. I'm going to give you, you know, a commission on how many Google reviews, and I'm going to have them just cold call from 3 years ago. You know,
Good for
hey, my
him.
dad said he's going to pay me a commission if I can get a 5-star review, or if you read why you won't give me a 5-star review, I'm supposed to take that too. I get paid either way. You know, can you help me? You know, and anyway, we'll see. See,
No,
give him
that's
some, give
awesome.
him.
That just don't tell Google you're doing that. So Google will ask people, hey, was there an incentive program here? And they will remove reviews. Google's getting crazy about removing reviews. I had like 20 removed the other day because they had names in it. from techs because we were incentivizing our techs. Hey, we'll pay you $25 per review or $20 per review you bring in. And then Google now is like, no, we want everyone leaving a review. We don't want them tied to a tech name because that means that tech is incentivized, which is not all fair because a lot of times our techs do good work and they just get called out by name because they did good work. And then these are actual organic reviews. And then Google's like, nope, which is sad, but it's like, is what it is. We still pay the guys for them. We're like, hey, if you did a good enough job to get a review, you know, called out by name without asking for it. So it, that's awesome. I love that. I think just giving kids ways to make money and like teaching them how to see things like what brings value, what's a pain point. And like for a lot of people, I mean, I built this website, told a couple of my buddies about it. And then I have a bunch of people who want to pay me $300 a month to build them a website. Right. And it's like, if you just go get good at something, you find a pain point. People don't want to optimize a Google profile and build a website. Well, it's like, it's actually pretty easy, but the barrier of knowledge is kind of high. So it takes someone 30 hours to go figure it out. Maybe they just want to pay you $300 a month or $200 a month, whatever it is. And your kids, your 17-year-old son's like, I don't got anything better to do. I can go do that. You know, I can charge $200 a month. And like, actually, don't be one of those kids who goes and builds like just a cheap front website. Like, go build the service pages, go build the city pages, go figure out search engine optimization, actually provide something that drags in leads, and then say, hey, we'll do it for free until you start getting more leads. And if you believe that you're going to do a good job, do it for free. They start getting leads, they'll pay you $300 a month, because especially if it's higher ticket sales, it's like, dude, they need three sales and they are paying for you 10x, right? So I love that. Like, but even just the incentive to like go call people and be like, hey, I want to get reviews, like that barrier to calling, that's a real thing. Like, people don't want to talk on the phone. It's embarrassing. They don't know if it's going to come across right. It's like, you know how you get better at it? Go do it 100 times. You'll get better at it for sure. And that's a skill, right? Talking on the phone. Everyone jokes with me, I talk way too loud on the phone, but I have never been told or never been asked to restate something on the phone. I have never been asked that. Like, unless my phone was not working, everyone can always hear me. And that's really annoying when you're on the phone, you're like trying to hear what they're trying to say. It's like, that's something I figured out early. It's like, so I talk loud on the phone and then they can always hear me. It's very clear. It's just small things like that that make a difference. I'm like, go out, go try stuff. If someone's doing it, they're making money doing it. Just ask questions. How does that make money? Why does that make money? What's the flow there? What's the transition? What's the pain point that they're solving? I wonder if I could solve part of that, you know? That's how making money works, is just providing value to people. So, and there's so many ways to do it. I kind of going back to your, like, we live in such a tough time for young kids, the home prices are so high. It's like, I actually buy into a little bit of that where it's like, yeah, like you can't just go get your job anywhere and buy a house. It is a little different, but we've never lived in a time where it's easier to start an LLC, go make some money, go buy a trailer, rent it out, make an extra $800 a month. Like, whatever it is, there's easy ways to make money all over the place. Go power wash some people's, you know, power washing's saturated, I'll get out, but like, go build someone a website, go do a good job, go mow some yards. Like, it's making money is not that difficult if you figure out how to save it. Like, if your dad's letting you live at home, that's $1,800 a month that you could save every single month, and you're telling me you couldn't get a down payment pretty fast if you live for 2 years saving $1,800 a month. Like, that's a down payment 100% all day long, right? So there's I just tell people, maybe you have to be more creative. I don't think it's all that much more difficult now. I just think you can't rely on one stream of income if you are working a corporate job. For most younger guys, it's like most guys are in there making $24 an hour, $26 an hour at some bank, or if you're working some W-2 job. And it's like, yeah, that's not going to be enough to buy a house. So go figure out a different way to do it, right? But, and I was telling a buddy the other day, have a vision. Like, women, wives are called to respect their husbands. And if, and as young men, we're like, we want to go get married. Like, that was a big thing for me. Like, I'm going to get married. I want kids. It's like, well, then you need to be a respectable person. And a really easy way to do that is to go do what you're called to well. So if before you're married, you're already providing enough money to be able to provide for your family, so you're better than an unbeliever at a minimum, then your wife can look at that and she doesn't have to worry, and she can go, that guy's worthy of respect because he's making my life easier. He's doing what he's called to and he's doing it well. And so that's where the respect thing, you see all these marriages that the wives like struggle with the finances. They're trying to budget for their husbands and they're trying to motivate their husband. It's like, honestly, that's a really hard spot for a wife to be, because they're called to respect their husbands, but their husbands aren't all that respectable. Like, they can't even do the bare minimum. And that's really tough. So it's like, as a 16, 17-year-old boy, go figure out how to be respectable. What are my paths to doing what I'm called to as a man, being a leader? Like, how am I exercising being a leader? How am I exercising providing for my future family? How am I going to do this well so that my wife can look at me and be proud that I'm her husband and will respect me? And I'll tell you, your home life will be so much better because your wife isn't struggling with the finances. That's not weighing on her. That's not her responsibility anyway. Like, that's your job to figure that out. If you can remove that from her, finances, like the friends that I talk to that have marriage issues, finances are at the top of the list of things that they struggle with. It's like porn and finances. And it's like, dude, if you can remove the finances, one, quit doing porn, figure out, get an accountability partner. If you have to, get a flip phone.
They might be related.
Yeah, and they 100% are. And oh, it's so funny. There's a whole rant here. But if you go out and you eliminate those stress points for your wife's going to love you more. She's going to respect you more. She's going to be okay with your leadership. Like, when you're saying, hey, we're going this direction, we're going to move to Utah, she's like, I trust him because he's doing the things that he's called to. And he's built that reputation and that rapport with me that I'll follow him anywhere because he's the man, right? And then that makes loving your wife so much easier, because men are like, she's just nagging, nag, nag, nag. It's like, well, if you aren't doing what you're called to, she's got to nag you because she knows what you're called to. She knows you're not doing it. And maybe she shouldn't nag you. Wives aren't, they shouldn't do that no matter what. That's a sin problem. But if you're not respectable, you're most of that problem anyway. You're causing her to sin because you're not respectable and she's called to respect you, right? So it's a whole thing. And if you're young, those young guys are thinking about these things early, it lights that fire. And like you said, if you're out working your ever living butt off, you don't have time. You come home and you lay on your bed and you go to sleep. Like, that's what you do. And or you're out on the weekends, you're going bridge jumping, you're doing cool things, you're dirt biking, you're hunting, all these activities, like, just go out and do stuff and then work really hard because you've got a vision. I think if you've got like a long-term play where you're like, hey, I want a farm, I want 60 acres, I want to help my son start businesses, I want to be able to pay for them, give them, you know, I want to be an investor in their businesses. So I've got to make enough money to be able to do that. So here's $100,000 to go do more that you like, I guess, do more with what you were given, right? And so it's just like a whole thing. But again, yeah, you're totally right. Then you don't have time for porn. And the guys who sit around and don't do much and just hang out, it's like, well, what are you going to do? You're going to be on your phone. You're going to be doom scrolling. And then stuff is going to come up. And that's going to drive you to things that aren't holy. We're called to be active. We're called to be masters of our work. And so, yeah. And if you can instill that in a young age, and if you can incentivize that by, hey, being a more respectful man makes you more marriageable. And for me, like, that was like the driving force when I was younger. Like, I am going to get married and like, I'm going to be a good man. I'm going to do that. It's like, that's a good fire to have, and don't satisfy it in cheaper ways. Right. So
yep.
It's a whole thing, but.
Well, I know you're a businessman and time is money. I appreciate you giving the time. Yeah. You know, I guess if you were going to push people, it looks like you're less active on X than you are on the other platforms.
Yeah.
I guess that's how I was able to talk to you instead of trying to hit you up on your YouTube or your Instagram. But, just give a quick plug for people and I'll make sure I put it in the show notes here too. So that'll keep working for you.
Yeah. Instagram's probably the best way to reach out to us. So you can DM us through Instagram and then, or my personal X. So Instagram would be BRC Builders. If you're in Idaho, you want a house built, you want a shop framed, you want some help with general contracting, reach out through Instagram, and then my X account too. Like, I'm active on X. I have not figured out X. Like, I figured out all the other platforms. I haven't spent as much time trying to understand it just because it's a different platform. It hasn't been in line with what I've been doing up until recently. And so I'm like, man, that algorithm is a lot tougher for me to understand than the rest, but just haven't become a student like I probably should be. But reach out over X too. That's those are the best ways to contact me probably. So
sweet.
Well, yeah. Well, hey, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it. And I'm taking away that the computer turned to the living room. I think that's pretty solid and probably a good play. because you gotta, I think kids gotta have a way to at least operate on the things that half a business is conducted on. And so you gotta give them those skills, but still monitor it to some extent. So love that.
I'll give you one tidbit at least, huh?
No, that was awesome. I appreciate it.
There you have it, my interview with Calvin Frust. I hope that was encouraging to you. I hope you're ready to get out there and take dominion where God's placed you. Again, if you know of a young entrepreneur at this level, it doesn't even have to be at this level, somebody that is making his way, has learned some things through warfare in the trenches, and is ready to share some of that for the benefit of those farther back in the path behind them, please send me a DM, let me know about it, do a virtual introduction, group text, whatever. I'd love to start putting some of these profiles of younger guys that are getting after it in front of people to give them earlier a prescriptive or an example of what they can do to grow their own abilities and bless their family, their community. As always, have a good one.